Welcome to Classical Baddies. My name is Sophia.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Nusha. And today we're going to be talking about some funky historical facts. Also, we're back on proper microphones now. You can probably tell.
Well, except for Katie. Me.
Anyways, this week's episode does not sound like it's being filmed for a gramophone. So that's a plus.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, why don't you start us off?
So the first fact on our list today is one that comes from the Renaissance era and you've heard in many a Christmas song. However, this is actually just a very common thing of the time, which is the words fa-la-la-la-la. Yes, now we think of them as absolute nonsense and they don't really mean anything. So fa-la-la-la-la in old songs actually was kind of nefarious. First of all, it was satire. It was used for satire sometimes to make fun of the new poetic stuff being used in the Renaissance. God, that was so incredible. Anyways, fa-la-la-la-la was not only used for satire, it also meant something along the lines of, let's get jiggy with it.
No!
What?
No! Absolutely not!
Let's excuse me? What?
That is not how we are going to explain this.
Let's get jiggy with it?
Yeah, so basically it meant, let's get drunk. Let's let loose. It also meant, let's
kick Katie off the podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so learning that from my choir teacher actually shook up my entire life and made Deck the Halls a lot different.
It made it better, honestly. That's what the holidays are about.
Fair enough.
Oh, guys, deck the halls with boughs of holly. What are the words? I don't know the words.
Deck
to that.
The halls with boughs of deck the halls with boughs of holly. Fa la 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 la.
Tis the season to be jolly.
I would be jolly if I.
Yeah.
I too would be jolly if I was getting railed. We're both.
Cool. Am I up?
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Okay, now that we've talked about those sexy fa-la-la-la-las, what is the sexiest instrument? Guys, I was asking.
Gotta be the saxophone.
Did you say the sexiest or the sexiest?
The sexiest.
It's the viola.
The viola. Mm. Anyways, obviously the sexiest instrument are the bagpipes.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
I want a man to serenade me with the bagpipes. Although, actually, if someone actually did, that would be 100% welcome.
Yeah, so if you want to date Sophia, show up at her window with the bagpipes.
Don't find out where I live, please. What was I talking about? Oh, my God, the saxophone. Yeah, I didn't mean... Okay. Adolf Sax defied death multiple times. This man, I think what I read was 7 times, although there were multiple incidences where this man should have died. Someone did not want that saxophone invented. So he, of course, is credited for the saxophone. There are a couple of other instruments as well as improvements he's made to other instruments. For some reason, the fact that this man defied death, either this, he had like a guardian angel or something else. Like, let me read this off for you. He fell down 3 flights of stairs and he hit his head on stone, which made him unable to get out of bed for a few weeks and left him severely concussed.
Oh, God.
He swallowed a large needle when he was young, and it just kind of passed through his system. Like, nothing happened to him. He swallows this massive nail, and it just goes through. He pooped it out. Nothing happened.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He drank a glass of something he thought was milk. You want to know what it actually was?
What?
Diluted sulfuric acid.
Oh my God.
How is it?
How do you
really? Like, 3 things acid? In. Yeah. I can't believe he's alive. Or was he's alive. He was alive.
He's now ripe old age of 200 and something, you know?
Incredible. He's a vampire. Obvi.
Yeah.
What happened next?
He got hit in the head by a brick. Like, I couldn't find details for this one, but it seemed like a brick flying down from a high spot nailed him right in the head.
Assassin. from the future preventing the invention of the saxophone.
Yeah, he's like, the saxophone.
Somebody wants this man dead.
Really. I picture that scene, you know that scene from Home Alone 2, where, like, he's like, and he chucks down the brick and hits, what's the name? I can't remember the bandit's name right
Marv?
Now. Marv, yeah. Gets
How
it right in the forehead.
How do you remember that? That's impressive.
I don't think you understand the amount of times I've watched Home Alone.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyways, next off, he also fell onto a burning stove. Another source said skillet. So, and stoves back then, of course, were just straight up fire in like a massive iron stove. So you could not get near this thing without burning yourself. So he had severe scarring from that actually lasted the rest of his life because he low-key cooked himself. And he almost drowned in a river at age 10. No one saw him fall in. It was only because a villager found him floating face down beside the mill and pulled him out unconscious and like resuscitated him that he survived.
Oh my god. God
really was like, no, you gonna die. And he was like, no.
Definitely an assassin from the future.
Also
for sure.
He fell out of a 3-story window onto the street. And got blown across his father's workshop from a gunpowder explosion. Flew across that shop. And then the other one I found was apparently there was an incident where his workshop caught fire. And it went down. And then an actual assassin showed up and shot a man he thought was him, but it was his assistant. So he shot
the
his
poor
assistant.
Wasn't
there.
Oh my God.
I know.
Also, it's not like the first time there was an assassin. It's just the first time the assassin was seen.
Obviously.
Nusha, what do you know that the rest of the world doesn't?
It was Nusha.
I said too much.
Oh my goodness. It was Nusha all along.
Bum, bum, bum. What do you have against the saxophone, Nusha?
Trash music. No, I'm kidding. I love the saxophone.
Yeah, you look my saxophone behind me in the eyes and you tell it it's trash. Oh, you can't see it in the shot.
You have a saxophone?
I do have a saxophone. I played the saxophone in high school.
You did?
Yeah, tenor saxophone.
Did I know this? Did we say this in the episode? And I just kind of like, we talked maybe about this, that, didn't we?
I feel like I mentioned it.
We talked about this on our own before.
I know. My brief stint as they didn't really have like a lot of saxophone players and they threw me all the saxophone solos in like jazz band. And I've never been like a great saxophone player. I haven't touched the thing in years. But like, yeah, I remember because I was away for a few weeks and they're like, oh, when you were away, we gave you all of the solos and I didn't learn any of them, made them up on the spot. And they're like, you are such a talented jazz musician. I was like, yeah, that's what it was.
Jazz music. Yeah, jazz.
Sorry, I forgot I had one more point for Mr. Sax. his nickname was Little Sax, the ghost.
That makes sense. Maybe he didn't survive. Maybe he was a ghost, and that's why he survived the rest of these assassination attempts. Maybe when the guy tried to shoot him, it was him, but it went through him to his assistant.
Dun dun dun! I think we solved it, guys.
The plot twist is he was dead the whole time.
Speaking of ghosts, let's move on to another dead guy, Tchaikovsky.
That's the only transition we're allowed to use.
So, I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to try. I think it's Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky.
Probably Pyotr Ilyich.
Okay. Pyotr Ilyich.
Ilyich.
Ilyich. Tchaikovsky. Ilyich. Sorry.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyways. He composed the Overture of 1812 to commemorate the successful Russian defense against Napoleon invading the Grand Army, something like that, in 1812. So he wrote the 1812 Overture. Wow. It's basically an overture in E-flat major, and he hated it. Mm-hmm. He wrote it, he put cannons in it, like legitimate cannon fire and chimes and brass fanfare and all of this stuff, and you'd think someone that put that much effort into making an overture and like getting all those things on a stage would at least be doing it because they have some kind of passion in it. But no, he hated every moment of it. He thought it was loud and noisy. A very direct quote, very loud and noisy and completely without artistic merit, obviously written without warmth or love, Tchaikovsky says about his own composition.
Oh, it's really funny.
He was actually so mad that it was successful that he thought that the world cared more about theatrical spectacle than the hard-fought for personal expression of his other symphonies, concertos, and chamber music. Buddy, you composed it.
Yeah.
He really said, he really was like, you don't understand me.
Like, people are like, wow, Tchaikovsky, this new music you created, it's great. And he's like, ugh, you.
You fool.
Why can't I remember the word? You
imbecile.
Fools. This was a test to see whether or not you knew true music, and you failed.
So Tchaikovsky was the first hipster, I see.
God, yeah. The Banksy of his time.
And he's like, you listen to my music? Trash.
It's just that I've never heard of someone getting mad that people like his music, but the wrong genre, like the wrong part of his music. Like, he's like, you like this one? That must mean that you don't actually understand my other music.
Yeah.
You're also not a real fan.
Maybe it speaks to how, like, how it was commissioned, and maybe he had very limited artistic choice over it, because it was very much like a Russian pride, like Russian almost propaganda kind of a piece. But it's so funny to imagine somebody going up to him and be like, oh my god, Tchaikovsky, I love your 1812 overture so much, it like changed my life, you know, got me through something. And then he just goes, yeah, exactly, in Russia, go to Russia, you'll hear this stuff. And then he hears that and just dumbass.
Some man who was like courting him was like, I love your music. And he was like, oh yeah, which one? I love the 1812 overture. Yeah.
Was Tchaikovsky openly gay?
No.
No, but I'm pretty sure he was gay.
I think people have made assumptions based on the canons that he used in this, but I don't think we actually.
Because only a gay person would use canons, because you just gotta be so extra.
And then hate it.
Yeah, and the secret gay loves. Yeah, there he is.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
But I was gonna say, people like analyze his work and stuff to see if there was like hints about his romance and what it actually meant and things like that. Yeah, speaking of dead people, for transition, we're gonna talk about Haydn's head that they managed to lose for over 100 years. So, I feel like we could talk a lot more about this, and I know there's other podcasts that have touched on it, but essentially, in 1809, Haydn died. Very sad. Oh. And they were in the midst of the Napoleonic Wars, so he didn't get the burial he truly deserved. And one of his buddies, who was obsessed with phrenology, which is the belief that you could, like, see someone's, or see how someone's brain worked, like see how smart they were, their personality, things like that, just solely based on like the shape and bumps on their skull, which of course now we know is a crock. And so he coveted Haydn's head because Haydn was a genius, and he goes, oh my gosh, if I could see this guy's skull, I could see what skulls required to hold a genius brain. So he hired a gravedigger, got the head, and brought it over to his buddy's house and had it cleaned. And he had this skull in his possession, and when Prince Esterhazy, like, 10 years later was like, oh man, I better give my old buddy Haydn, like, the burial he deserves, they exhumed the body, and surely enough, it's missing a head. So, Nyusha, you look very disgusted.
When you...
Anyways,
You say clean, you mean, like, they took his flesh off, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, wait.
They dissolved the flesh in a certain solution.
Did they, like, wait, sorry, how soon after did you say they took his head, after he was buried?
I'm pretty sure it was, like, 2-3 nights afterwards. Like, the dirt hadn't even settled. Yeah. Yeah, they got in there pretty fast.
So his brain was also in it.
Yeah, and it was, just starting to decompose. God. It's nasty. But anyways, we're gonna keep talking about the skull. So he has the skull. He wanted for so long. He even kept it on a mantelpiece. Like, this guy was not shy that he had Haydn's head.
This guy has issues.
Yeah. And then, of course, Prince Esterhazy's now like, who took my friend's head? And eventually someone's like, hey, that guy's got it on his mantelpiece. So the guards come over and they knock on his door and they search the house everywhere. They can't find it because this guy, I can't remember his name. I forgot to write down his name, but you know what? It doesn't matter.
Joseph Carl Rosenbaum.
He got his wife to sit on the skull under her skirts, and she sat in bed claiming that she was having her monthly cycle so none of the men would dare touch her or wanted to like get near her.
One time misogyny worked in your favor.
Oh yeah, and they come back to this guy's estate and they're like, okay man, we know you got the skull, just hand her over. And so he just gives them some random skull that he also had. He just had this other skull lying up.
Jesus.
And so they buried that one with Haydn until 1954, where this skull, Haydn's head had been passed down to like one of this guy's friends who'd been passed down to like another friend. It just got passed around until the person who got in possession of it was like, I should get rid of this. And they pretty much approached the Esterházy I'm pretty sure they approached the Esterházy family and were like, hey, I have Haydn's real skull. So of course everyone's like, who the hell's head has been in there the whole time? And so because they have no idea whose skull was actually in there, Haydn's tomb is now buried with two skulls.
Oh, fun. Interesting.
Yeah. Wow, there's no real segue for this.
No, okay, wait, how about this? I'm sure Haydn probably had a great love of pastries, huh? Segue to your topic, Katie.
Oh?
If we're going to make up one
speaking of pastries.
If we're going to make up one fact about Haydn, it might as well be that he liked pastries, you know?
You never know.
I'm just making an assumption. Yeah, Haydn loved pastries, and so now, probably loved pastries. So now let's move on to Katie's next topic.
So, if Haydn loved pastries, he would really love this story. The Feast of Pheasant was held by the Duke of Burgundy, called Philip the Good. In 1454, on February 17th, which was a Sunday. This event was held to impress the nobility of Eastern Europe so that they would go into battle with the Burgundy army against the Turks, who had
captured Constantinople.
Fall of Constantinople in 1453 led the Pope to invite Duke Philip the Good of Burgundy to mount a crusade to take back the city from the Turks.
Ah, this was very bad for Christianity. And Philip the Good took this very personally. So, in order to have, you know, a bigger army, mm-hmm. he wanted to hold this festival. So he went all out for this. When the guests arrived, the moat was filled with orange water. I do not know if this means that they had oranges in the water or if the water itself was orange. Nobody said if that what that was. Inside the Duke's palace is where the feast was held. The long tables were under a canopy of velvet and gold. The buffet had gold and crystal glassware that was encrusted with jewels. Like, this man really was like, I need to impress them, and just went all out, like, with the most extravagant stuff he could find. The table had silk cloth on it that touched the ground. There were embroidered cushions with different coats of arms on them on the benches where they would sit. They had a naked lady. Just, you know, chilling in the side on the side of the room, leaning on one of the support pillars.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To show that you're, like, strong and have lots of money. Who was also protected by a lion, who was chained up beside her. This was to exhibit that the lady was there as a symbol of Constantinople, and the lion was used as a symbol of the protection that it would be. That it received from Flanders' army. Wow. Other than just the lady and the lion, there was a wheeled platform that was built to look like a church, with stained glass windows, and they had choir boys in it to sing. Apparently, their singing was beautiful. And then, last but not least, which is my actual favorite fact, is that there was a pastry castle at this feast.
So a castle made out of pastry.
Which explains why I mentioned pastries in our segue. Just need to bring that back.
Right, yes, yes. And so it was like, okay, so this pastry had 28 musicians in it that were performing. Now this, they had like flutes, lutes, horns, there are a bunch of different instruments that I'm not going to name.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of them.
Okay.
But, like, could you imagine just sitting down for a fancy dinner and you're like, oh, yeah, this man wants me to go to war for him. Oh, look, a castle built out of pastry.
Yeah,
he's like, oh my god, there's music coming out of it.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
How big did that thing have to be?
Could you imagine explaining that to the musicians and being like, look, I know you don't have a lot of choice because you're, like, tied to my court and, like, I support you in every way. But, like, James, listen, this is what you gotta do. You gotta get in the pastry.
I don't understand. It's a pastry castle. Does that mean that it's just, like, one big pastry? When I first heard this fact, nobody mentioned that it was a castle. My history teacher was like, they were just inside a pastry. Now, does that mean that it's one big pastry that they were inside of, or like a bunch of little pastries put together, like a croque-en-bouche? Which one is it? Because to me, the one that's the most entertaining is if it was like a big puff pastry that they just like cut a hole in, and they were like, all right, in you go.
And they just had like a cutout door or something in the back that they walked in.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that they that nobody saw.
At least it's not for the exposure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man. Okay.
Moving on to another court with another dead man. Last dead man.
We're really nailing these segues today. We're really nailing it.
I think these are the best segues I've ever done. We're going to talk about Jean-Baptiste Lully. Dude lived from 1632 to 1687. He was a French baroque master. He worked closely with King Louis XIV. He was actually very good friends with him until Louis found out he was gay, and then he really hated him. And then he wrote King Louis's favorite opera. I think it was also the one that was kind of like written for King Louis. written for King Louis because he was the Sun King, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't he, like, super narcissistic?
Oh, yeah, people used to watch his, like, morning rituals. Like, he had a special, like, viewing part of his rooms. Like, people would come into his rooms and watch him rise with the sun and, like, take a dump. Like, it was weird.
And, so King Louis XIV, he was a ballet dancer, right?
Yeah, and he's the one that insisted everyone takes ballet lessons because he couldn't stand how people walked.
Yeah. He was that.
What?
Yeah.
Lully actually attracted the attention of young Louis XIV, dancing with him in the Ballet Royal de la Nuit. And so then by like 1653, Lully had been made the royal composer for like instrumental music and then blah, blah, blah. And then Lully was obsessed with opera. Anyways, he died eventually, as they all do. And it was a self-inflicted wound to the foot. He stabbed himself with his own pointed staff. I think it was by accident. And it was used for keeping time. Like, literally, like, his own little metronome killed him. We all knew metronomes would kill us one day. This one killed him back then.
I was figured it was a slow mental breakdown for me, but, yeah.
He was conducting Te Deum, and he accidentally stabbed himself, and then gangrene kicked in, spreading to his legs, and then finally killed him on March 22nd, 1687, three months after he dealt the blow. Yeah, so basically, he killed himself by accident, which is, you know, always what you want to do.
Oh, God.
You know, apparently, musicians die a lot earlier than normal people.
Well, yeah, that's one statistic that, like, they die younger, but I also think it's because they're looking at all the crazy, like, famous musicians who, like...
Oh, yeah, they obviously were looking at the 27 Club, but, like, regardless, it's kind of wild.
Yeah. It could be depression. It could be accidental stabbing when you're conducting things. It could be an angry courtesan or king. You don't know. Death comes from all angles. Oh. And that's where we end this episode. Thank you for listening, guys.
All right, Nikki, why don't you tell us where you can find us on social media?
I swear we're okay.
Are we?
I don't know.
Are we?
All right, thanks for listening today, guys. I hope you guys liked all these funky facts we brought for you today. So if you want to find out when we're posting new episodes, what's going on, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook under Classical Baddies, except for Twitter, it's Classical Baddies. Yeah, and then on there you have our cards site.
Our card site has everywhere that you can stream us, including Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many, many more. If you like us, please leave a like and a rate on Apple Podcasts if you can, or anywhere that you are allowed to. It really helps us out, and it really helps us spread the word of Classical Baddies, which I don't know what it is. But I guess we'll figure that out.
It's a thing. But also, shoot us a message on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever, and let us know what you want to hear from us, what you want to hear about next, you know?
Yeah. We're open to suggestions. Perfect. Well, thanks so much for tuning in today, this week, or whenever you happen to catch us, and we hope to catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.